Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
It's great to have your company on this edition of Africa Link from our studios in Bonn. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Coming up, South Africa's corruption watchdog says President Jacob Zuma benefited unduly from a publicly funded upgrade on his private homestead.
His failure to act in protection of state resources constitutes a violation of paragraph 2 of the Executive Ethics Code and accordingly amounts to conduct that is inconsistent with his office.
Rights group Amnesty International calls on Swaziland to free an editor and human rights lawyer.
There is a concern that if the matter is brought to trial as a criminal contempt matter, that there may be an allocation of a judge, possibly, who would not approach the matter in an impartial manner.
And we shall also go behind the headlines to find out how the Zambian government is responding to growing calls for constitutional reforms. I'll be right back.
Top story.
Taken to task for wasting taxpayers' money. A report released on Wednesday by South Africa's public protector, Thuli Madonsela, revealed that President Jacob Zuma had unlawfully upgraded his private home. Zuma had claimed that his family was responsible for covering the cost of buildings in his private homestead in Nkandla. However, the report says the president diverted public funds for the upgrade. Public protector Thuli Madonsela has recommended that Zuma pays back a reasonable percentage of the costs. Subri Govender has more on the story.
Although the public protector found that President Jacob Zuma had not deliberately misled Parliament when he said most of the developments at his Nkandla homestead had been borne by him and his family, she found that Zuma had failed to act against the use of state resources for installations not directly related to security upgrades at his family home.
His failure to act in protection of state resources constitutes a violation of paragraph 2 of the Executive Ethics Code and accordingly amounts to conduct that is inconsistent with his office as a member of cabinet, as contemplated by section 96 of the Constitution.
Thuli Madonsela's damning and scathing report runs into 450 pages and also contains a 75-page executive summary. She found that initially the security upgrades had cost 27 million rand, but in a period of 5 years, the cost had increased to more than 260 million rand. She said, when finally completed, the upgrades at President Zuma's home would cost nearly 250 million rand. Zuma's African National Congress, or ANC, has been criticizing the public protector for her decision to pursue the investigations. In spite of the increased pressure, Madonsela carried out the investigations and found that Zuma and his family had benefited unfairly from the security upgrades carried out by the Department of Public Works.
President Zuma improperly benefited from the measures implemented in the name of security, which include non-security comforts such as the visitor center, the swimming pool, amphitheater, cattle crawl with culvert, and the chicken run.
Public Protector Madonsela in the report said Zuma would also benefit from other installations in front of his homestead at the expense of the South African taxpayer.
The private medical clinic at the family's doorstep will also benefit the family forever. The acts and omissions that allowed this to happen constitute unlawful, improper conduct and maladministration.
Local media in South Africa has described the report as unprecedented. On the streets of Durban, the main city in Zuma's home province of KwaZulu-Natal, many say Ms. Madonsela should be applauded for being brave in carrying out her work despite the intimidation from some ANC leaders.
The public protector is actually doing its job, which is amazing. I mean, it's really awesome. Security upgrades is a very thinly veiled little excuse, and anyone who has two pairs of eyes and a brain in their head can see that it's not just for security upgrades. The excuse that the pool's water is there for fire is ridiculous.
Very important to a president of a country to have a security, but not spending so much in one house. In very few years, somebody else be taking as a president of a country. He's going to spend the same amount. That would be unfair.
The public protector will definitely come under further condemnation from the ANC. For now, she has recommended that Zuma reports to Parliament within 14 days to state how he plans to refund the money that was spent on installations that were not part of the security upgrades at his homestead. In its first reaction, the government said all those responsible for not following proper guidelines would be brought to book.
Subri Govinda reporting. The Nkandla corruption allegations come as South Africa prepares for the May 7th general elections. So will this report affect Zuma's chances of re-election? A question I put to our other correspondent Tuzo Kumalo, who was present during the report's briefing in Pretoria.
This report is indeed a damning one on President Jacob Zuma, the fact that he has been allowed to repay some of the money which is allegedly have been used improperly on at his home. It is just going to be a difficult one for Zuma. But as far as his re-election is concerned, this will not affect him. Zuma is a candidate for the ANC, and the ANC is expected in these coming elections to win with the majority, and they will have the majority in parliament, and they will just elect Zuma. So it will affect him, but not to the extent of stopping him from having a second term in office.
The ANC seem to be downplaying the report, calling it a political report. Do you think that this is a wise strategy for the ruling party?
It is indeed not a good strategy, because if you look at the sitting president being told to repay because money has been used under his eyes at his own private residence, really that doesn't sound well. But the ANC has always had confidence in these matters because it is the majority party in the country. It has grassroots support. So usually they know they will also get away with this one. And things like corruption and things like the character of individual is not a contested issue as far as elections here is concerned. People just downplay it and underlook it. And the ANC knows it, that when it comes to elections, people are just going to vote for it as a party, not considering the characters that are involved in this. For instance, the President Jacob Zuma, who has been asked to pay back some of the money used in his private residence.
Right, let's talk about the president himself. He has reacted to the report and say that he will use it as a tool to address or to probe any claims of maladministration in his government. Do you think that this is possible for him to really probe the allegations while he himself is being incriminated?
Indeed, you are right. The minister has just responded tonight at a brief press conference saying what the public protector has found is exactly what they found in their response, in their report. So they're saying there's nothing wrong. Where the public protector said the building of things like the crawl, the visitor's place, was not a security issue, the minister went on record to say these were security issues. According to the government, they still see it like that. And of course, there's still that question that how is it possible that they are going to clamp down on corruption, on the people involved, when the two ministers, the Minister of Police and the Minister of Public Works, are also have been found guilty in terms of they did not administer well that project. So it's a big question again to say everybody's looking at seeing what President Zuma is going to do, whether he's going to fire the ministers, so that from there then you get all the public servants who are involved in this fired as well. But the government is saying it is taking action, and it will take actions after starting the public protector's report.
DW correspondent Tuzo Kumalo in Pretoria.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
The Kingdom of Silence. Rights group Amnesty International on Wednesday called on authorities in Swaziland to free an editor and a human rights lawyer. Beki Makubu, the editor of The Nation, and human rights lawyer Tulani Maseko were arrested on charges of contempt of court after publishing two articles. Media in Swaziland operates under strict regulations where criticism of King Mswati III and his government is not tolerated. Mary Rayner, a researcher on Swaziland at Amnesty International, has been telling me more about the arrested men and the articles which led to their arrest.
There were two separate articles. One was a reflection by the editor of The Nation, and the other was an article by the human rights lawyer. Both in various ways were reflecting on specific judicial proceedings in which they presented a view that there was interference or impropriety of some sort in the judicial proceedings. And the articles are part of a bigger picture of 3 or more year crisis in the rule of law in Swaziland, in which the Law Society and other organizations inside Swaziland and outside Swaziland have been expressing concern about the way in which the administration of justice is conducted and creates problems of access to the courts in a fair and impartial manner for anyone who needs to approach the court to seek a remedy, including for human rights violations. The articles are part of that process of domestic discussion and reflection. They also followed articles that were published in The Nation several years ago, which led one of the two men, Becky Makubu, the editor of The Nation, to be arrested and to be brought before a proceeding charged with contempt of court. And he's still waiting for his appeal against a very severe sentence which was imposed on him.
Were these articles then directly criticizing Swaziland authorities?
One of the articles was raising a comparison between the history and policies of the late President Nelson Mandela and the head of state in Swaziland. So there was also a political dimension, also in the context of commenting on the impact of the political arrangements in Swaziland, which make judicial independence quite fragile.
What are the chances that they would get a fair trial in Swaziland?
Well, we'll have to see what happens. They will be trying next week to obtain bail, and we will continue to follow the situation. There is a concern that if the matter is brought to trial as a criminal contempt matter, for instance, that there may be an allocation of a judge, possibly, who would not approach the matter in an impartial manner. Cases are allocated, as we noted in our press comment last year, when Becky Makub was convicted of contempt of court and an extremely harsh sentence imposed on him. We noted last year that cases are allocated in a manner in which it certainly creates the impression that they're not allocated in a completely impartial way in terms of who hears the matter.
Amnesty International's researcher on Swaziland, Mary Rayner.
Behind the headlines.
Fighting for change. Zambia's president, Michael Sata, promised a new constitution as far back as his election in 2011. A draft was finished months ago, but its adoption never seems to reach the daylight, let alone parliamentary vote. Now, opposition members, student protesters and activists are breaking the silence and calling for a so-called people-driven constitution. In this report, Stephen Mpuku goes behind the headlines to uncover Zambia's clamour for a new charter.
The cry for a new constitution in Zambia is getting louder, but the government does not appear to be listening. Anyone who demands for the new constitution faces sharp reactions from the government machinery. Last week, 42 youths from an organization called Action Aid were arrested for wearing T-shirts that bore messages demanding for a new constitution during Youth Day celebrations. Pamela Chisanga, the executive director of the organization, was not happy the way the police treated the young people.
They were thrown in cells with other suspects. Some of them were even beaten, and then they were forced to take off their T-shirts. Even for the young girls who didn't have any appropriate clothing under the T-shirts were also equally made to take off the T-shirts.
Many people have condemned the police for the incident. An organization that advocates for good governance in Zambia, the Foundation for Democratic Process, FODEP, said government has turned the police into political tools to silence those calling for the new constitution. FODEP Executive Director McDonald Chipenzi says government fears that it might disadvantage the party and the current president, Michael Sata.
The other part that they seem not to be happy about is the age limit for a presidential candidate. So they feel that this constitution may eliminate the current president from contesting because he's over 75 years.
Recently, MPs boycotted parliamentary sessions in protest against government's lack of commitment to the process. They then tried to move a motion urging government to provide a roadmap, but that was blocked by the ruling PF party MPs. Gary Nkombo, who moved the motion in parliament, says the opposition was compelled to do so because of the inaction by the government.
The PF's contradictory statements are actually the ones that got us anxious as to the levels of commitment to give the people their draft document. The statements that were coming from His Excellency the President, the current constitution is adequate, and all it requires is piecemeal amendments where need be.
The government has sought to defend itself against accusations it was not moving fast enough. On Sunday, the Vice President Guy Scott said that enacting a new constitution will not automatically solve all Zambia's problems. The Justice Minister Winter Kabimba said that government would rather concentrate on reducing poverty among its citizens. He said in Parliament that Zambian people did not only elect it on the basis of enacting a new constitution. The opposition political parties and civil society organizations are now planning a mass demonstration to pressure government to enact a new constitution within a specific time frame.
That report was compiled by Stephen Mpuku. Let's now head to Malawi. The southeastern African nation is one of the poorest countries in the world. Young girls bear the brunt of poverty as parents sacrifice their daughters' well-being to bring up their sons. In many cases, the girls are married off to older men when they're only 10 or 11 years old. But there are some who are trying to change this practice. Benish Ahmed reports from Malawi on a program which is helping mothers keep young girls in school and help prevent them from experiencing some of the hardships they themselves had to go through.
Marita Innocent squints outside the Napunguja Primary School. The sun blares down on her and the red earth extends in every direction. She has a hardened look and doesn't like to repeat herself. She's small but strong, in more ways than one. Marita is 18 and a single mom. Her own mother fell ill when she was in the third grade and died soon after. Her father remarried, and Marita says his new wife didn't like her.
That wife was providing for my father as well as for her children, but not for me. So sometimes I had to go to sleep without having eaten anything.
Marita lives in a small nearby village where almost everyone is a subsistence farmer. She had a hard time at home and was flattered when a young man named Christopher expressed interest in her. Marita fell in love with him, and even though she was just 15 at the time, their relationship progressed quickly. Christopher said he wanted to marry her.
He proposed to me. We started a relationship. Later on, he got me pregnant. Then when I was 5 months pregnant, the guy said, "You're not educated. I want to marry someone who has an education."
Christopher left her, and Marita's life changed dramatically. She dropped out of school to care for her baby and moved in with her grandmother. Last year, she received some surprise visitors, a group of mothers from surrounding villages. They were there to help Marita go back to school after 2 years away.
In fact, I was hesitant at the beginning as to who would be taking care of my baby. But the mother's group convinced my grandmother to take care of my baby while I went to school.
The mother's group is a network of 40 women in this school zone in southern Malawi. They've teamed up to reach out to girls who've dropped out of school. In addition to the annual school fee, they provide exercise books and school supplies, plus uniforms and shoes. To help the girls, each member of the mother's group makes a monthly donation of 50 Malawian kwacha, around 10 euro cents. To raise more money, the women decided to start a small farm. Marcy Jawadu, one of the mothers, explains.
So people started coming in with different ideas, and we decided to go for this, because these crops don't require more inputs like fertilizer. You just put it in, and at the end of the season you have nuts and sorghum. So that's why we chose this initiative.
By selling their produce, the group earned some 15,000 kwacha, or 26 euros last season, which is only enough to support three girls for one school year each. Despite the lack of funds, keeping girls in school is deeply important to Jawadu and her fellow Mothers Group members. Many of them dropped out themselves when they were 12 or 13 and never earned a primary school certificate.
It's only school that can provide for them in the future. They can get employed somewhere. Even if they don't get employed, they can start their own business. They can at least know how to run that business because they have the knowledge.
Marcy Jawadu looks to be in her 50s. She says she still regrets not finishing school. Jawadu calls herself a victim of an early marriage, having been married off to someone much older when she was in her early teens. The problem of early marriages and early pregnancies is widespread in Malawi. It cuts close for the country's president, Joyce Banda. She tells a story of her primary school friend, Chrissy, who, despite being bright, was forced to drop out in the fifth grade.
She was selected one of the best girls' secondary schools. I was selected also one of the best girls' secondary schools. She went one term and never went back. When I came the next holiday, she didn't even want to see me. She had dropped out because they couldn't raise the $6 that she needed to go to secondary school. She got married at 15, and she's still where I left her. She has seven children, locked up in poverty, and I am where I am. I've gotten here.
President Banda is convinced that early marriages are an issue of poverty, not custom.
When in a family there's no income, or if there's little income, they will prefer to send the boy child to school and leave the girl behind. And if the girl child is not going to secondary school, and because of the secondary education in Malawi is not free, the girls are not going to secondary school. And if they don't go to secondary school, the community encourages them to get married.
In Malawi, half of all girls are married and nearly a third are mothers before they turn 18, according to the United Nations. Only one out of six girls finishes the 8 years of primary education. The Mangochi region in southern Malawi has some of the country's lowest school enrollment rates for girls. But the trend is changing because of initiatives such as the Mothers Group.
Binish Ahmed with that report from Malawi.
Opinion.
This week's opinion takes us back to our main story, President Zuma's implication in the Nkandla corruption scandal. A report released by the South Africa's public protector says Zuma's use of public funds to upgrade his private Nkandla homestead was unlawful. However, the presidency reacted to the report, saying they will use it to probe claims of maladministration. Which brings us to this question. Can the South African government be trusted to probe corruption claims while its leader is linked to the same allegations? Send us your say, either by text message on +491609575910 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And before we part ways, let's recap on our main stories. South Africa's public protector Thuli Madonsela has said President Jacob Zuma's upgrade on his Nkandla private residence was unlawful. Amnesty International has told this program it is concerned about the fate of two activists in Swaziland detained on charges of contempt of court. And we also heard about a program in Malawi which is trying to keep young girls in school after they have given birth. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. You can always find more news and information by visiting our webpage www.dw.de/Africa. And this program will be back same time tomorrow. And until then, this is Crispin Mwakideu. Bye for now.